recent high-profile incident, an incredibly tragic one at that, in River Falls has pushed the issue of domestic violence front and center in western Wisconsin. Three young girls were found dead in their home, their throats cut, and their father now sits in the St. Croix County Jail on three counts of first-degree intentional murder. It's events like these that get people talking about how something like this could happen or why someone would do something so awful to their own family. But domestic violence doesn't wait for high-profile cases. It happens all around us and can happen to anyone, regardless of gender, age, race, or ethnicity.
This hour on the West Side, we look into domestic violence in western Wisconsin, the causes, the effects, and the services available to victims. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side. I'm joined by two domestic violence victim advocates in western Wisconsin. First, I'd like to welcome Executive Director of the Bolton Refuge House in Eau Claire, Jerry Wilkie. Jerry, thanks so much for being here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And joining us by phone is Kim Wojcik. Kim is the Executive Director of Turning Point for Victims of Domestic and Sexual Violence in River Falls. And Kim, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And I'd like to welcome our listeners to the program. What should be done to aid the increasing number of people seeking more help getting out of violent relationships? Should there be more funding, more education, more severe penalties for batterers? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Now, Kim Wojcik, I'll start with you. And there's certain perceptions about domestic violence that may be misleading or at the very least not really telling the whole story. So, Kim, what is domestic violence? How do we define it?
I think sometimes it's good to just define it in conversational terms, and we always typically think a lot of times about physical violence when we say violence. So, you know, black eyes or broken arms. But what we're talking about is any kind of abusive behavior between intimate partners or partners or married couples or dating relationships and families. It could be emotional, it could be name-calling, it can be spiritual, it can be stalking or controlling. So any type of abusive behavior between family members or intimate partners.
All right. So if we were to boil it down, what is this all about? What is domestic violence about?
It's about power and control, typically, is how where we come from as advocates. So in these situations, typically one person has power and control over another, is attempting to gain that and using, you know, all a myriad of different ways to go about doing that, which would fall into one of those abusive type categories.
Kim hit it right on the head. It's about dominance and control and a number of techniques, maneuvers, situations set up such so that the one party can take over control of the other party's life.
And Jerry Wilkie, do generalizations or perceptions about domestic violence say the picture that comes to mind of a person wearing sunglasses because they've got a shiner? I mean, does that harm the efforts to stop it? Does that trivialize it?
Yeah, it does. It trivializes it and minimizes it. And because, as you said earlier, as we started off the show, it cuts through all people's lives. It doesn't matter what profession you come from, your income level, your educational level. In the 26 years that I've been involved in providing services, I've seen victims come to us from all walks of life. And I think more and more, I think the public is beginning to recognize that, and consequently maybe why more and more people are stepping forward to try to address the issue, that they're not marginalized as a certain segment of the population. Quite frankly, if one thinks in their head, if you haven't been touched personally by domestic violence, either yourself or a loved one or a close friend, you're probably in the minority or you haven't really opened your eyes.
Mm. Now, I want to talk about the case. It's kind of the peg or the hook that got me really thinking about doing a show about this. Is at the beginning of July, a story broke about the horrific incident in River Falls. I'm talking, of course, about the murder of the three girls, ages 5, 8, and 11 in River Falls. And perhaps the most troubling of it all to me was that the person that is now charged with the murder was their father. I could not comprehend something like that happening. Kim Wojcik, being in River Falls, how did that affect the small city there?
Yeah, and the most troubling about that to me is that, but also that, we have to keep in mind that not only did he do that, shortly after he did it, he called the mother and said, "You can come home now, I just killed the children." Mm-hmm. And that's what Jerry and I were referencing with that power and control. So, obviously the community is still raw, we're all in shock, and we're all trying to heal and do a lot around that, but it has created a lot of awareness. We have a lot more people reaching out for services, and a lot more people asking how they can help. So,
and citing that case specifically?
Absolutely.
Mm. Jerry Wilkie, we hear about people. I mean, this is not the first time this has happened. Usually disgruntled fathers killing their children. We hear about it too much. Why does it happen? I mean, is that the ultimate?
It's the ultimate lever, the final finality. We see the continuum of the violence and his power and control techniques. And we'll talk in terms of he, she, because it is primarily a behavior, a crime perpetrated by our gender. Not exclusively. Mm-hmm. There are exceptions and all the programs provide for those, but more often it is our gender who is the perpetrators. But we see the continuum all the way from just kidding around, making jokes about her or her body. Oh, I was just kidding, and then that continues on up the line. And we will hear frequently as it gets the steps just before the homicide, suicide, or killing the kids is, you leave me, I'll see you in court, and I'll win custody of the kids. I'll take the kids away from you, or I'll kill the kids, or I'll kill you. So, unfortunately, that in many of the victims that we see, those threats are verbalized in a lot of ways. And all it takes is being said a few times, and even one incident of violence, that makes a person think twice in terms of if they want to leave that relationship or not and run the risk of losing your children, either through the most tragic of him killing them or possibly losing custody of the children.
Yeah, and the custody issue itself is such a messy one, and I'm sure that both mm-hmm. of you have dealt with it extensively. It's just such a painful thing, and is there a lot of people, Jerry Wilkie, are there people that just will endure a negative situation just to avoid the stresses or avoid the...
It's avoiding having a loss of her children to a very unhealthy and abusive father, the fear that he, in fact, will get custody, and in all likelihood, he'll get significant visiting and what that may do to the children. And then she's not there to try to protect the children. Now, and realistically, there's limitations to what she can do to protect the children within that violent relationship. But that's one of the things that's holding her in there is for the sake of the children, mm-hmm. To protect them.
Kim Wojcik?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Same thing. I mean, do you witness people that, or have you experienced people that will, at all odds, just try to avoid confrontation in order to protect their children or themselves?
Yeah, and I think it's important because we've talked a lot about this case, obviously, but just in general, that we're not talking about normal custody strain or normal relationship problems. We're talking about something significantly different, which is domestic abuse and domestic violence. And Jerry's right, that falls on a continuum. So, let's keep in mind when we're talking about this, we're talking about potential batterers or abusive behavior that falls somewhere on that continuum. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the reason people stay in these relationships is complex and unique. But the most important question we have to ask is not why they stay. It's more, why do people batter, abuse, control? And so we need to take the focus off on why does she try to keep her family together, and is she avoiding conflict, and just say, what is going on with, you know, society allowing men or whoever, women, to do this type of behavior? And then, like what you said in the beginning, what are we going to do about that? What kind of accountability are we going to have? What kind of education are we going to have? And so it's a good question to ask, why do they stay? But sometimes we redirect that. I mean, we definitely are empowering women and asking those questions, but as far as a community, we need to say, why do people beat their wives and children or control them or verbally abuse people?
Now, Kim Wojcik, I don't know if we could even call it a silver lining, but you mentioned that there has been more awareness. What are the people calling for, and what are they saying when they reference what happened in River Falls?
Yeah, definitely an increase in calls from people who are in, you know, violent or abusive situations, saying that they feel like this case was a lot like theirs, and all the threats now seem like they could be real. Definitely we're getting increased calls from people who we've provided services to, who are saying that it's created a lot of tension, anxiety, and created a lot of stress for them, and they need a lot of support around what to do with this information. And then, you know, obviously community members wanting to help, increase donations. But the people who are calling are saying that they're somewhat motivated out of fear. They're afraid that she might really do it. Like Jerry said, it's typically men. Or that this case reminded them a lot of what they've gone through, and they don't want the outcome to be the same.
Hmm. And Jerry Wilkie, has anyone at Bolton Refuge House or that has passed through or called for support, have they mentioned the River Falls incident at all?
I think we had one occurrence that we had a phone call where an individual referenced in the case of describing what's going on in her life at the time. And unfortunately, throughout the state, we will see tragedies like this from time to time. And like you said, it's horrible to look at a silver lining, but with such trauma that these family members are going to continue to go through for many years, if not all their life. But the silver lining is that for at least the time being, mm-hmm. there's a public awareness of what's going on. But that can die off, too.
Well, and what do we do to stop that, to keep it from dying off?
Well, we do what we're doing right now on a radio program and talking about it. And you don't like to have to bring up things that aren't pleasant, but you got to talk openly about it. Mere fact, we're sitting here talking openly about it is already starting to combat the domestic violence. The best tool that an abuser has is isolation and secrecy, okay? But if the public is open and talking about it and presenting an attitude of, you know, we don't tolerate this in our community. Granted, there'll be squabbles. We all have that in our marriages. But as Kim said, there's a big difference between squabbling and one of danger and dominance and control. And when the public talks about it openly, that right now during a tragedy, it makes a difference. That in itself is a way to prevent domestic violence. That in itself is a way to help people to be willing to step forward. You're not going to step forward if you don't think you're going to be believed.
Mm-hmm. And with that, people, if our listeners, if you want to call in and share a story, perhaps you can be completely anonymous, share your story, or tell us what you think needs to be done to help stop and help end domestic violence in our region, in our state, and, you know, big picture in the nation, the world. Give us a call, 800-228-5615. The number again is 800-228-5615. Now, Jerry Wilkie, I called in the Bolton Refuge House recently because I was doing a story. There was a report from the Department of Children and Families, or some data that I got from them, mm-hmm. that people are staying longer mm-hmm. in shelters, 12%, and 12% longer, and also asking for more services. Why is that? What is the cause?
Well, it's a combination of things. One of the big things is, unfortunately, during these tough economic times and some other policy decisions that have been made in our state and in some other states, services have been cut. even if cuts in child care, cuts in housing, things, that affects battered women's ability and tools that were more readily available to her to get out of that relationship and build a healthy relationship for herself and her children. As those tools become more and more scarce, they become more likely locked into that relationship or more likely taking longer in the shelter and more demands on the shelter to provide those services. A lot of direct services, people services, have been cut. And that many of those, if not almost all of them, do have an impact on battered women and children. So that's part of what we're seeing. The challenge is greater with less resources.
Now, Kim Wojcik, one of the things that I heard from, it was from the shelter in Madison. I can't think of the name right at the top of my head, but I think it was the Peace Center or something like that. But Kim Wojcik, one of the other things that they mentioned is that the violence is being reported is more severe, or is the person mentioned a lethality index? Is that something that that you're familiar with at the at Turning Point?
Yeah, absolutely. And to comment on the previous question, we used to have an average shelter stay of about 30 days, and we're up to people being there basically 90 days because they're having trouble accessing a new housing or affordable housing and stuff too. But yeah, we definitely have seen an increase in the level of violence. What seems on some level in some cases to have once been verbal abuse may be escalating to physical violence. What was physical violence might be relating, escalating to homicide. So, which really makes sense when you think about the challenging economy and the stress that people are under. So I don't think the challenging economy is creating batterers or creating domestic violence, but I do think it is definitely exasperating where there already was these types of situations. That's what we're seeing.
Jerry Wilkins?
I would agree with Kim on that part. We make it clear that the economy is not causing domestic violence, but it is an enhancer of it. And yes, the individuals we're seeing in our program, either in the shelter or transitional housing or coming in for safety planning or restraining orders, the severity is increasing. We've seen more strangulation and more sophisticated stalking going on with technology. Mm-hmm. And of course, with every good thing that's invented, it can be used for sinister things. And so we've seen that increasing.
And what about raw numbers in the shelter at Bolton?
Well, if just from 2009 to 2011, we've seen a 62% increase in unduplicated individuals we see. Now, that means men, women, and children. And in 2011, we came close to the 2,000 mark of 1,952 unduplicated individuals that we provided some level of service to. And that doesn't count phone calls that we can't unduplicate or count. So that's right. A totally separate. And when we look at their projection in terms of where we're at right now, just finishing up July, we will clearly break that mark. That's a good, bad scenario. I think the good news is more people are seeking services. The bad news is we're doing it with less and less resources available that we get or are out there.
So, Kim Wojcik, how do we know if that's because more people are being abused or whether it's because more people are saying, you know what, I'm not dealing with this anymore, or they're getting the courage to ask for help for the first time?
Yeah, you know, there sometimes are a lot of unknowns. Sometimes we rely on, like, Jerry because he's been around for 26 years. But, you know, we're in the trenches. We're talking to people all the time. And then we just have to kind of use a professional judgment to say, you know, what efforts have we increased? What communities have we improved our reach out to? What services are we offering that we maybe weren't or have enhanced? So I don't know that in domestic violence you ever really know a whole lot for sure. That's what makes it so difficult to get a hold of. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are working on this and have a lot of professional experience. So, you know, I don't know that we never, ever know, but I know that we have really enhanced and improved our outreach across western Wisconsin. And Jerry and I have had this discussion. So, you know, from where we're sitting, we really feel it's a bigger reach out from services, an increase in awareness, years of education,
I would
some economic challenges.
I would agree with you, Kim. And over the 26 years living in Eau Claire here and working here, I truly don't believe there's more domestic violence going on, because I think we're headed in the right direction. We're getting more people to the table and recognizing it. Back 26 years ago, this was pretty darn lonely work. You know, the medical community didn't even recognize it. The clergy community didn't really step to the plate and recognize it. The human services. But many of these systems now are beginning to recognize that domestic violence is at a lot of times at the root problem of what's going on in your community or in a family. You know, you go to your medical exam now, they ask you if you wear a seatbelt, do you wear a helmet, do you smoke? Is it safe in your house? That's because a lot of advocates throughout the state did exactly that. They advocated that systems get involved and take responsibility. So that's one of the keys of making a difference. More people at the table, more people addressing the issue. Not just programs like ours. We cannot and never could do it on our own.
We're talking about an upward trend in people seeking shelter from assistance in dealing with domestic violence in western Wisconsin. We've got two domestic violence victim advocates here on the show, and we'll return with more. This is The West Side.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Visit Winona. Winona, the historic island city along Minnesota's Great River Road, Highway 61. Online at visitwinona.com, where arts, culture, and river beauty converge.
Andy McCormick plays the saw and will do so Saturday at the Wide Spot. Stacy Poitras uses a chainsaw in national championship sculpturing. They'll both be here to talk about their craft, as will Jim Oliver to introduce us to Tamara Sharp, directing Joseph in the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in Rice Lake. Corazon is a fire performer. We'll learn about that art. And yes, there's even more coming up on this week's Spectrum West. It all begins at 5 p.m. tomorrow on Ideas 88.3 and 88.7.
Support for WPR comes from Wollersheim Winery, celebrating 40 years in the Wollersheim family, offering a variety of wines, tours, and events. Information on this historic site, overlooking the Wisconsin River, is at wollersheim.com.
I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening. We're talking this hour about domestic violence in western Wisconsin. It seems to be on the rise, or at least more people are reaching out for help. I'm joined by Executive Director of Turning Point for Victims of Domestic and Sexual Violence in River Falls, Kim Wojcik, and Executive Director for the Bolton Refuge House right here in Eau Claire, Jerry Wilkie. And we're taking your calls. Listeners, do you or have you or someone you know faced domestic violence? If so, how did it impact your life, your family, and most importantly, how did you get out? You can give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. Callers can remain anonymous if they so choose, and you can also post a question on or a comment on Facebook. The number is 1-800-228-5615. Now, we're going to go to the phones for our first call of the night, and joining us from Siren, Wisconsin is Melissa. And Melissa, thanks for calling in. What is on your mind?
Hi, I am an attorney that provides free legal assistance for victims of sexual assault and domestic violence.
Okay.
through the nonprofit Indian Head Community Action Agency. And I'm just calling to let you know that I am very aware of this situation, and we have been providing free legal services to over 250 victims since our program has been initiated a year and a half ago.
All right. And have you noticed any, since you've been doing that, providing those services, have you noticed more people seeking them out, or how is funding? I mean, I've got all kinds of questions for you, I guess.
Yes. Since people are starting to become aware of our program, referrals have just increased dramatically. Because Judicare and other free legal services no longer exist, because they exist, but not for the victims that need the services. Because although victims can be from any race, social status, et cetera, I would say probably in what I'm handling, 95% are meet the low-income status. Mm-hmm. And I do represent currently right now 12 counties in western and central Wisconsin. I oversee the program with one other attorney.
Okay.
Well, I'll invite you up to Eau Claire here. I wish we could say we have the same. We are a judicare issuing agency, but the reality is, which I think you alluded to, is that if it's a simple divorce, judicare, you got a chance of getting help if you're low income. I've never seen a domestic violence divorce, particularly when there's children involved, be a simple divorce. And when there's child custody issues involved, the chances of us getting judicare to be able to handle that case, you know, say yes to it, is slim to none. And then also it's very hard to come up with attorneys. So I wish that there were more projects like what you described happening in the other communities. The question that keeps and always is asked, well, what can we do? Well, what we can do is make sure that victims of domestic violence, when they go for their divorce, that they have equal representation, a lawyer like yourself there defending their interest, so that the abuser's threat doesn't come to pass, that she loses custody of her children or that the children are placed in an unsafe situation that she can't have any influence on.
And go ahead, Melissa.
Well, I was just going to say that's correct. And if our grant is approved for September, which we are pushing, but with all of the things going on in Congress right now and the lack of funding, we don't know if that's likely. But if our grant is approved, we will be adding Pierce, Chippewa, Eau Claire, Lincoln, Dunn, and Portage counties to our list of 11 that we already have.
You better put a list of a lot more attorneys on board, because I think you're going to find that there's going to be an overwhelming need there. People ask, what can I do about domestic violence? The answer, one of the answers, there's others, is make sure that victims have equal representation when they go to court, a lawyer.
But what's unfortunate is that attorneys nowadays won't take pro bono cases, especially domestic violence, because they are so sticky.
Yep.
And it's very important that our program exists and continues to exist. So any support that we can get is...
I agree with you 100% on that, and that's been our experience. The sad part is we're always having to go to those same lawyers that are willing to extend themselves. But you reach a point that, you know, you're going to burn them out. You know, they can only do so much. They got to make a living. Quite frankly, my biased opinion is... before every time you renew your bar license, every attorney ought to have a pro bono.
You know, and that's interesting that we're actually going to be talking about access to justice next week on the West Side. There was recently a meeting in Eau Claire. A commission is looking into how to improve access to legal assistance, not just for victims of domestic abuse, but for people that of lesser means. So that is something we're going to be talking about next week. And it seems to be a pretty big issue. So, Melissa, thank you so much for calling in, and thanks for the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. Right. And any victims that are looking for services, if I could make a plug for my program, that would be great.
Sure.
They can give me a call at 715-415-0397, or they can send me an email at melissia. MOGEN@IndianHeadCAA.org.
All right. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Kim Wojcik, how big of a part of what you do is relating to legal issues, relating to custody, and relating to separation or divorce?
Yeah, it's definitely a big part of what we do. We have 7 full-time staff, and one of those people is really assigned to be a legal advocate. So, you know, when you think about somebody working 40 hours a week and all the time they're at work, they're dealing with these types of issues, court referrals, helping with attorneys, processing restraining orders, you kind of get an idea of how big it is. But, you know, a good amount of the people who are dealing with domestic abuse aren't ever entering the court system and aren't even coming forward. So I think we need to keep in mind when we talk about the socioeconomics of it is, you know, we may be seeing people who have those financial barriers, but we have to keep in mind a lot of people are never in the legal system. So it is a big part of what we do, but I think a lot of people we're not getting to or that are coming forward aren't accessing the legal system for a lot of different reasons, too.
And for the listeners, we're talking about domestic violence in western Wisconsin, and which seems to be on an upward trend, or at least, again, more people are reaching out for help. You can give us a call with your comment or question. If you want to share a story, you can remain anonymous. Just reach out, and we will listen. The number is 800-228-5615. That number, again, is 1-800-228-5615, or you can post a question or a comment on our Facebook page. And just go onto Facebook and type in The West Side in the search bar. Now, before we start getting into budgets, which, of course, from what I've heard from any number of nonprofits, that budgets are getting tighter, and that goes for government, that goes for everyone, really. I want to talk to both of you about the different age groups involved with domestic violence. You know, again, people tend to have a presumption that, well, it may be, you know, young 20-something to 40-something type people. But Kim Wojcik, we were talking a little bit earlier about teens and teen dating violence. Could you talk to that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about the spectrum of children in the home witnessing violence and all the way up to later life abuse with older people. But yeah, the discussion we had was about teen dating violence and how our community is actually focusing on how can we coordinate our efforts with that. Because what we're seeing is an increased number of teens from where we're at that are in actual domestic violence dating relationships. Hmm. And like Jerry commented before about technology,
right.
They're using technology in a lot of different ways in power and control dynamics. When you start thinking about, you know, 300 controlling texts or sexting and Facebook and, you know, different technologies like that. So, and what's happening is there's a large gap because people aren't seeing these situations as, like, domestic abuse or domestic violence. They're just saying, you know, oh, is that teen dating or oh, is that. So we're getting parents calling us, you know, asking, is this normal? Is this domestic abuse? And so we're really trying to respond to that. We think that's something we can do to really work to end domestic and sexual violence.
And you've opened up a text hotline, is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we were the first text hotline in the state of Wisconsin. We've actually had the project modeled after us in a few counties. So people can text in 24 hours a day. It's free and anonymous, like everything that we do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can text anything. They can just say, you know, is this normal? Does this seem abuse? We've had several teens texting in that they were sexually assaulted, and a lot of the teens that text us eventually call us and many times come in and actually meet with someone. So we've had over 300 texts since we started the program in August. So, and we haven't actually officially launched the promotion of it. I'm really looking forward to getting all the material out on that on our campus at the University of River Falls. And I think we have to be prepared for a really large influx of texts at that time.
Well, that's really interesting. Just kind of a new frontier that, as Jerry mentioned, that it's a wonderful thing, but it can be twisted around. Mm-hmm. Jerry Wilkie, in your 26 years, did you expect that there would be?
No, I never thought I'd be talking about GPS and abusers sticking GPS systems on their victim so that they can track their whereabouts and just magically starts appearing at places that seem to always be able to find her. So unfortunately, abusers can figure out the techie stuff. Now, I'm not of the age that I could tell you all the stuff and how they do it, but for every good thing with technology, it can be twisted and used as a way or a tool to abuse, to control, to intimidate in unhealthy ways. And one thing I would mention that I think Kim touched on that made it real clear that it does cut through all ages. It used to be in the 70s, people were stereotyping that victims of domestic violence were young women with children. That's stereotype. Not true. It cuts through all ages, from the teens to older, battered women. And it was always there, but now I think it's being better recognized by the community. And consequently, if you look at services that are happening throughout our state in programs, they are serving a broader age range, as well as a recognition that happens to special needs populations, mentally ill being more vulnerable to domestic violence, individuals like that can be more vulnerable.
A reminder, we're talking about domestic violence in western Wisconsin, and we are taking your calls. We're having a bit of a technical issue with the call-in system, but we are just about back up with that. Do give us a call if you've got a story to share or if you have a question or a comment for either of our guests. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Now, let's talk about it. It's something that has to come up anytime I have any program. Invariably, we talk about money and about budgets. Jerry Wilkie, I'll start with you, but then we'll go to Kim in River Falls. State, federal funding sources, how are they faring for nonprofit domestic violence advocates?
Not good is a good way to put it directly. It's become extremely challenging. It's interesting. Public perception, awareness, and involvement is very good. Okay. They're willing to help out there. Our politicians just don't quite get it. All the time. They're not willing to fund those kind of things. We're not a mandated service, okay? By the way, our animal shelters are. We have to use our dog license to fund our animal shelters. But domestic abuse shelters for battered women and children are not mandated services. So therefore, guess what first is attacked at a local level and goes out? I've seen a lot of local communities have to drop or choosing to drop funding to their local domestic abuse programs to meet their budget. Not that there aren't some other areas that are very important, but from my bias, people are most important, okay? Particularly when you're talking to abused women and children. I just can't imagine that the local politicians don't see that as priority one. But it doesn't happen that way. State level. The only good thing I can say there is, generally speaking, it's been flatlined. Well, if you have flatlined year after year after year after year after year,
essentially,
that you're in trouble. Something's got to give. So cuts in the, at the same time, you're talking about 62% increases in the level of services you're doing. There's a big gap there. Federal, same thing. They can't even get the VAWA Act passed, okay?
And what is that?
The VAWA, Violence Against Women Act.
Right.
Our federal politicians are playing political games with people's lives. That is morally, ethically wrong. Get off the politics. Get it done. People are most important.
So that sounds like now, Kim Wojcik, that sounds like you're more and more reliant on donations from whether it be companies or individuals. And with the economy in the tank as it is, and slowly we're told climbing out of it, is that hurting our private donations down as well?
No, actually, it's amazing that the community, responds when we need things. So as those funding streams are lessening, we've had to increase our individual giving and our fundraising and our foundation grant writing. So we've been able to stabilize our budget, which has actually been amazing. So, but that takes a lot of time and energy and effort. But the community has responded. We also have a thrift store, which is kind of a way that we're able to generate some revenue. So, but the time and energy that we would have been spending on generating increased revenue to add services to reach out to, communities that have more barriers, we've been using to just stabilize to the amount of funding that we have had in the past.
Right. Stabilize is a nice way for Kim to put it. It's called hold on by your teeth, okay? You put it so nicely, Kim. And I've been very proud to be part of the nonprofit world that we work in. We know how to stretch a buck better than anybody, and domestic abuse programs are really good at that. I'm a believer they could learn government could learn how to stretch a buck work if they'd work in the nonprofit sector for a while. And I also would agree with you. We're very fortunate at the community levels that the generosity and kindness of people, even during a tough economy, are holding in there. That's the one thing that has held fast in our funding sources is the charitable giving.
All right. We're going to deviate a little bit. We are still having a little bit of an issue, it looks like, with the phones. But one caller asked what the difference is between the woman who drowned her children. I believe that was down in either Madison or Milwaukee. And the man in River Falls who murdered his. Anyone want to take that? Kim Wojcik?
Give that one to Jerry.
Jerry, I'm not sure.
I'm not, you know, it's hard to compare cases without getting into the details of each case. I'm a little bit familiar with what you're talking about. First of all, I don't know if it's the same case I'm thinking of that she's referencing. There might be some cultural aspects to this, depending on where it's from. Other than I will say that I have seen instances where women in desperation do crazy wrong things in a relationship. That includes suicide, and oh, how tragic to take the life of her own children. And again, mm-hmm. I don't know the details of that particular case there. Well, any loss of life, whoever perpetrates it, is wrong. So I think it's easier to answer that question in terms of what is the same. It's wrong. It's traumatic. It will cause great trauma in all the families involved.
Right, and historically, just throughout, you know, we've seen cases of that where extreme distress, you know, perhaps, but you know, I'm not sure which case the caller was referring to either, which is yeah. Trouble, which is rough. But
one thing I can reference in relationship to that for the value of it is that the studies I've seen, for whatever reason, one will have to make their own judgment, that women who commit homicide. Domestic homicide, and men who commit homicide, women end up getting far harsher penalties.
Interesting.
Why is that? I guess each can judge, but the studies time and time again have shown that.
Yeah, and you know, the Wisconsin Coalition for Domestic Violence does a really good job. Every year they put out a homicide report on any domestic violence homicides that occurred in the state of Wisconsin the previous year, and we're able to look at those and read through them, and they give a pretty good description about a lot of the factors leading up to it. So as directors, it helps us. You know, we have the lethality assessment that you mentioned earlier, and we're able to look at each one of those cases individually. And, you know, there's always so many different variables and dynamics, but there is some research done about, you know, why men potentially might kill their children in these situations. And we did write a blog about it last week on the rivertowns.net. And there was three national experts who just discussed, you know, some reasons why men may do that. And typically it's older children when men do it. Typically there's custody issues related to it. They speculated that it was to inflict pain on somebody. And, you know, I don't know much detail about that other case, so we don't know. Mm-hmm. I have to say that it couldn't have been the same. But that homicide report is a really good resource, and I think anybody could have access to that.
And speaking of which, wasn't it 2010 that was some sort of an all-time high for homicides, domestic violence homicides in Wisconsin, Jerry Wilkie?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the homicide report, the abbreviated version of it, and give you an example here of a couple things out here. 532 Wisconsin deaths related to domestic violence happened between 2000 and 2010. There were a number of incidences in 2010. One thing that drew my attention, an issue that I've always been concerned about, is over 51% of the homicides in Wisconsin in 2010 were done by a firearm. And that gets us into the whole issue of the firearm issue. It's been my experience, at least, and many others in the programs, that bringing firearms into a domestic violence situation increases the likely likelihood of a homicide. Hence, we know that all too tragic because of our name, of our shelter, Bolton Refuge House. Officer Bolton was shot and killed by a perpetrator coming to the shelter with a firearm when Officer Bolton was trying to protect that woman and their children there. So.
And we will take our final break here on the West Side. We're talking about domestic violence in western Wisconsin and what is what seems to be an upward trend. We're joined by two experts and advocates for victims in western Wisconsin, Jerry Wilkie and Kim Wojcik. And we'll be back with more in just a bit. This is the West Side.
A gentleman who plays music on his saw, and another who uses a gas-powered one to create works of art. Playing with fire for the entertainment of others, Joseph puts on the Technicolor Dreamcoat in Rice Lake, and more on Spectrum West, 5 p.m. tomorrow on this Ideas Network station.
Our website, WPR.org, features thousands of hours of archived audio. When you miss a program on our Ideas Network, it's a good bet you can listen later on the web. Programs are available at WPR.org. Click our audio archives.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. This evening, we're talking about domestic violence in Wisconsin, which is on an upward trend, and the services available to victims. I'm joined by Jerry Wilkie, Executive Director of the Bolton Refuge House in Eau Claire, and Kim Wojcik, Executive Director of Turning Point for Victims of Domestic and Sexual Abuse in River Falls. If you'd like to get into the conversation, give us a call. We'll try to get you on the air. We are having some technical difficulties, but we will do our best. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. What more can we as a society do to end domestic violence in our own communities? Should there be more funding? Is that the answer? Give us a call, tell us what you think, or check out our West Side Facebook page. Now, shelter space. We had a reporter with Wisconsin Public Radio, a colleague of mine, Shemaine Mills in Madison, did a story in which she spoke with you, Jerry Wilkie. And this was that there's a growing need for shelters in the state, and space is running out. I think the lowest beds per capita shelter is in Madison, but all around it seems to be that they're filling up. And Jerry Wilkie, according to what I read in the story, the Bolton Refuge House has recently had an expansion. Are you still at capacity? I mean, has that alleviated the
No, and you can't keep building shelters. It hasn't alleviated the problem. We doubled our capacity for sheltering out of necessity because it was getting very, very bad. And you never want to deny somebody emergency shelter and they be the next homicide victim because that service wasn't there, or when that person makes that difficult decision to leave, you need to kick in support services. Because if you look at the studies and the homicide report that Kim referenced, tells you that too from the research, that a woman is six times more likely to be killed upon leaving an abusive relationship. And that's the time when you want all the systems to kick in, including the emergency shelter. But again, just keep building shelters is not the answer. You've got to focus on all the systems playing their role. Not any one system can do it on their own, not just the legal system or the religious community or the advocates, providers of victim services. It's got to be a total community effort and a total community attitude of total intolerance for domestic violence. That perpetuates the attitude and helps a great deal in the safety of us working with victims, too. If the community isn't giving its indirect approval, even through things such as battered women jokes, you know, what's so funny about somebody getting killed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we change those kind of things happening in the community, then I think we'll continue to have a more lasting and a long-term impact.
Kim Wojcik, first, how is capacity at the Turning Point?
Whoop. I'm bad.
I had you had your volume down. How is capacity there?
Yeah, we have a 17-bed emergency shelter, and we're full most of the time. And you know, we do
have a considerable amount of turnaways, is how we call them. So if somebody calls for shelter and we don't have space available.
All right. And you know, one question I've got for you, Jerry Wilkie, is, you know, as a man speaking to a man, what can men do? Or is it...
First of all, we can do exactly what we can do, men talking about this issue, okay? Because let's face it, we're the primary perpetrators of this. Now, there'll be the occasional person that'll say this is a 50-50 proposition. It just ain't that way, okay? Not in true domestic violence. Yes, occasionally... men like ourselves can be victims. So us talking about it, raising the conscious level, and calling our partners or calling our colleagues who are male when they do things that are putting down women or repressive in nature. It's because it's really about oppression, mm-hmm. Male's power, okay? We were given that over the years and put in that position. And always fearing that equality would somehow bring us down as men. In reality, it rises us all up. So being confident in ourselves and speaking up and supporting women who are in abusive situations. Obviously, dollars are important, but also attitude and actions and how we live our lives day to day on how we talk about women and how we treat women. And we treat them as truly equals. And maybe someday, I keep working at it, men will be on an equal level, including the pay scale, which right. We still are repressing women.
That's a whole other show right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, that's part of feeding into domestic violence
sure.
is what it is.
The superiority thing.
Yep.
We had another caller that wasn't able to get on the board because we had some technical difficulties, but... We had a caller who was a male victim said that the abuser needs help as soon as he or she is identified. Do abusers need help?
Abusers need help. First of all, if the abuser is getting help, it increases the probability and safety for the women. So if he's getting help and he doesn't change at all, if it's he or she, it's still worthy of doing. And in some instances, individuals can truly unlearn some of those attitudes, behaviors that they've learned over time. If they're genuinely recognizing and taking responsibilities for their actions and not blaming their partner.
And Kim Wojcik, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We've got about a minute left. Any final words? What do we need to do as a society to fix this?
Yeah, I think people like Jerry said, we need to talk about it, but we need to make sure that you don't have to have all the answers to talk about it, because I think sometimes people are apprehensive. They don't know what to say or they don't want to say the wrong thing. But right now we just need to keep talking about it. We need to change the social norms, like Jerry mentioned. So, and take the shame out of it. If you could do one thing for me, it would be make sure you're not blaming the person who is being victimized. So every time you stop to ask, why did she stay, just stop and say, why did somebody do that to somebody?
There we go. That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests for their great discussion on this topic, and very important topic at that. Executive Director of the Bolton Refuge House in Eau Claire, Jerry Wilkie, and Executive Director of Turning Point for Victims of Domestic and Sexual Abuse in River Falls, Kim Wojcik. Thank you both so much for joining us. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, for handling on-air production, Joey Dietrich for promotions, Grace Fair, and Dean Kallenbeck as well. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week.